When it comes to hard work, there's one important rule. Pick the right tool for the right job. That's why Chevy offers a family of Silverado pickup trucks designed just for the job. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
Hello, hello. Welcome to WGN Nightside. This is the problem we always run into with the bump.
Yeah.
I just want to let it go. It's late. Don't you want to listen to it just a little De La Soul?
I'd like to listen to it a little longer.
Yes.
I'll shut up.
Me, myself, and I. You're listening to Griffin Filipich and Doma T. Pongo on WGN Nightside. And thank you to producer Tom, but we've renamed him T. Hush for the rest of the show. Does that work?
Yeah, that work. That's good with me.
Has anyone ever given you that name before?
T. Hush?
Yeah.
You know, most people go with Hushy or Tomo or Thush.
Hush Puppy?
Hush Puppy is a big one.
Yeah, Hush Puppy's a nice one.
Yeah, but no, I like T. Hush. It's got cred.
Griffin Filipich gave him that name, and I co-opted it. So that, there we go. So at least for this evening, it's myself, T. Pongo, Griff, and T. Hush.
I was just saying. Well, I don't want. I was just referring to your email, which is. But I don't want to give that away. I guess on the air. Sorry.
No, you can email T. Hush. But no, happy Labor Day, man.
Happy Labor Day to you too. I think the three of us have all celebrated by laboring.
Yes, all day. We got a lot of exciting things for you on the show right now.
What better way to celebrate Labor Day than to work? Right?
Than to labor.
That's what it's all about.
Work doesn't feel like work, though. And that's what we're going to talk about this evening. When work does feel like work, what are your first and worst jobs? We're going to get into that. We're also going to talk about Jeffrey Owens from The Cosby Show. I don't know if you saw this, guys, but there's this picture floating around of him working at Trader Joe's. Not looking like the Elvin we knew and loved.
Right, that was Elvin, from The Cosby Show.
From The Cosby Show. And as you heard us talking with Patty Vasquez about, we're also going to talk about Colin Kaepernick being the new face of Nike. What do we think of that move for the company, Steve Bannon? And finally, if you're still up with us well toward the end of midnight, we're going to be talking about that new Eminem album, Kamikaze, and some of our favorite performers who have been in the industry for a very long time, may have had some good albums and bad albums, and might be past their prime. Is Eminem one of them? So that's going to be a good one.
Stay tuned for that. But yeah, it is Labor Day. I was, and Domiti, we're slowly in this process of getting to know each other. We've done two shows together. This is number three.
Yes.
But I don't know that much about your background still. Exactly.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't know what jobs you've done to get to this point in your life. Is your first job your worst job, first of all?
My first job.
Would you say that's your least favorite job that you've done?
Because that's a good question. Those are two different questions.
Yeah, first job and then worst job.
So my first job was my least favorite job, but it wasn't my worst job. My first job, I was a sandwich artist at Subway. That's what we call ourselves, people. I'm a sandwich artist alum.
And what was the genre of art you were working in? Were you a...
I was
a modernist,
in realism.
A realist?
I was a realist.
You were a realist sandwich artist?
Yes. Made sure the lettuce looked like lettuce. That was my goal.
That's pretty good. I think most sandwich artists are like abstract expressionists. Right. You just throw it all on there.
And to this day, when I go to Subway, I get really irritated when they don't make the sandwiches correctly, or if they take too long, or if they're new and they're still counting the meat, because we used to have to count the meat that you put on there.
Wow.
I really
get 4 slices.
Three on a 6-inch, 6 on a foot long.
I'm
if it's
so
a turkey.
Sorry.
Yes.
Sorry.
Still remember.
So you like really hover over them. And then if they do something wrong, you're like, you know what? Let me get back there. Throw on a hairnet.
I really want to. I really want to every single time. And when they move slowly, I start to give them the ingredients, like just more quickly, you know, lettuce, spinach, cucumber, like just to move them along, get it going, move it along. You got a line here, buddy. Like, you know, I can't shake it. But that was my first job. That was my very first job. What about yours?
Well, my first job was at a grocery store, a local grocery store now out of business, unfortunately, in LaGrange Park, Illinois. DeVries Grocer and Meat Market, rest in peace. It was a great first job. It was just like 3 hours after school.
I sense a bit of nostalgia. You're like looking wistfully off into the abyss right now.
It's hard not to think nostalgically about small, local, family-owned grocery stores. I mean, they're kind of a thing of the past. they're kind of dying off. So that was definitely not my worst job. I actually kind of like that job. And I think that's a good sign.
Yeah.
Well, no, I guess it's a better sign if your first job is your worst job, because then you've just been, it's been all good since then.
Yeah.
Or at least it's been better since then. What's a job you liked less than being a sandwich artist?
Working as a district manager intern at Aldi.
Oh, okay. So you did a little in the grocery.
I was in the grocery business. Yeah. So I worked as a district manager intern. What district managers do, they're over the managers, and you have like five stores in your region, and you go from store to store and, you know, make sure they're doing things correctly. What they don't tell you is that you'll be in a suit, and because all these stores, they keep their prices low because they are really lean on workers there, you know, and wages. So that's how they're able to keep their prices low. So you have a whole store maybe run by two people, and it's a job that potentially five or six could do. And so if you come in and pop in at a store, if you want your workers to love you, you roll up your sleeves and you start doing stuff. So I'm in a suit in my internship thinking I'm a district manager intern, and I'm sweeping cigarette butts in a parking lot. I'm like doing lawn care. I ripped one of my favorite suits. It was bad, a Sean John suit. I thought I was the man. Now I look back at pictures, it was too baggy, three sizes too big. I look terrible. But yeah, that was a terrible job, man. It paid a lot though.
Paid well.
Yeah. What was your worst job?
That's something. Well, it's probably tied for my worst. I don't know if it's actually my least favorite job, but it's the most notable one that I can, like, other ones are kind of boring, just like, yeah, that sounds like a bad job. I worked with the Mall Santa at the Mall of America one winter. Because I went to school in Minnesota. A friend of mine worked there year-round at the place where you get old-timey photos taken. You know, you go in and they set it up like you're a gunslinger in the Old West or something.
Yes.
You know, one of those booths. They ran the Santa stand. Well, there are two Santas at the Mall of America, first of all, because it's huge. So there are two places that you can go to get your photo to. And we were at a slightly fancier one. This one, you need a reservation to see Santa.
Get out of here.
It was called the Santa Experience. And she was just put out a thing on Facebook, like, does anybody need a job for a month and come work with Santa? So I did that.
What did you do? Were you Santa? Did you put on a beard and a belly? Like,
of course I couldn't be Santa. I mean, with this body. I'm so lean.
So lean and mean.
We didn't have to dress up like elves. That's usually what people ask. I wore a polo. But I was an elf in that I assisted Santa. Like that, I had the same role. God. Mostly they take photos with the kids, and then I showed them to them on the big monitor and then tried to get them to buy them.
That sounds stress-free.
Does that sound stress-free? Well, yeah. Working with kids, you know.
See, Hush is like, not at all.
That's just terrifying.
There were just a couple really bad moments. You know, I'm showing them, it's a computer monitor like mounted on the wall. And I'm showing families photos they just taken with Santa. And the kids are standing there and looking at themselves on this pretty big monitor. I like to make it kind of fun if I could. What I would often do is zoom in, because I'm sort of adjusting the photos on the computer, and they're looking and centering it, maybe zooming in a little bit.
Right.
I would always zoom in really close on the kid's face, and it blows up big on this monitor. And they would be like, I don't know, it's stupid. But they always thought it was funny. So that was like a little way for me to pass the time during the day. Except one kid who absolutely freaked out as soon as it got big. Yeah, I'm like, oh, what's happening now? And his face is getting huge. And he's like, I don't know, and I hate it.
His face was literally exploding.
He started crying. And my manager was like, what are you doing? Can you just, why are you doing this anyway? I was like, I don't. There's nothing to say. I made this kid cry, and I was just standing there like, I don't know what to do.
Griffin, did you have a sales pitch that you had to give, like a script you had to read to get them to spend a lot of money on the picture or something?
It's a great question.
Sounds like you were kind of doing a little improv there, you know?
Yeah, I was trying to get everybody involved and raise the mood before I make my pitch. You know what I mean? You know,
set them up for the kill.
Exactly.
I got you.
Exactly.
Okay.
But I want everyone to be happy. They're going to hear your pitch in the right mood and then go from there.
I got you.
I was not an exemplary employee. There may have been a pitch that was told to us
that you're supposed to do.
But I don't remember it. And but really, it's like once they're in the door, they are there for the photo, so they're going to make the purchase. So they didn't really impress upon us the need to really sell it. Like they were going to buy. That's what they were there for.
But didn't you have, I know some of the ones that when we were bringing the grandkids to, is they had extras. Like you could put a frame around it, or you can have a sheet like a 8x10 and then a bunch of wallet photo versions and kind of build up to a bigger package, kind of like a school photo package.
Right. We definitely had all that. And I probably should have been doing some more upselling. But, you know, if I could go back, I'd do it all differently.
Would you go back? If you could go back, I doubt it.
I would love a second chance. If my manager, Melissa, is listening, please.
Call me in the morning.
Just put me up in a hotel. We need to take a quick break. But I want to come back and I want to hear stories from listeners about your worst job, first job, anything notable you'd like to share with us. The number is 312-981-7200. You can call or text. I want to come back to those when we come back on Nightside. I'm Griffin Filipich with Domi Tipongo.
You're tuned in to WGN Nightside. This is Domi Tipongo. Griffin Filipich here with me right now. Tom, what are we listening to right here?
Wait, you don't know this?
No, man.
You don't?
No.
Wait, this is really interesting. Okay.
Like,
you'll know it when it hits.
We gotta hear the chorus.
It's gonna take like 9 hours to get there, though.
It's so funny. I like to say I have a high music IQ.
Oh, here we go.
Love listening to this on a Monday night. You know what I'm saying?
About the weekend.
Working for the Weekend by Loverboy.
I actually just pretended to know it. I danced in here with you guys. I do not know this song.
You still don't know it, having heard the chorus.
I have not heard this song.
That is really shocking.
I think it might have been in a movie. Was it in a movie?
I mean, probably.
It sounds familiar.
I think it's been in like 1,000 movies, probably. But it's so funny that you say that because I was just at, before I came here, my friend Tori, shout out to Tori, was hosting a Labor Day party at her house. That's where I came right over from there. And she had like a Labor Day themed trivia night that she put together herself. One of the categories was songs about work, and she played 3 seconds from a bunch of songs all about work. And you had to, from listening to 3 seconds of it, you had to be able to guess what it was. And that was one of them. And it was just the first 3 seconds. It was just the first three drum hits.
Meanwhile, it took me 90.
And you still don't know
and
it.
And I still don't know it.
But I knew it from about, like 2.5 seconds. I was like, oh, of course. But not everybody there was so quick to it. And you don't even know.
I don't even know the song. All I love know it. Is, work hard for the money. That's all I got. good karaoke song.
That one came up too, yeah. so funny. Well, we've been talking about work and...
Happy Labor Day.
Happy Labor Day. We've got another 37 minutes left. Before the end of Labor Day this year, and we were talking about some of our first jobs and our worst jobs, and it was reminding me of that story about Elvin from the Cosby Show, Jeffrey, blanking on
Jeffrey Owen,
Jeffrey Owens, yes, thank you. There was a photo of him that was circulating online all week, working bagging groceries at a Trader Joe's.
Now, Elvin, his character. He dated one of Bill Cosby's daughters on the show, and he was you guys definitely remember this character, but this picture floating around shows him a bit out of shape. He has dirt smudged on his shirt. He's unshaven. He looks bewildered as if he's telling the person, hey, stop taking a picture of me. And it's floating around online, and it's really embarrassing. And this conversation is coming up.
But, well, first of all, I mean, just that the place that you start this conversation from is already a little contentious, because is it embarrassing? You know, that's the context that it's been circulating in. And there were a couple news stories like, wow, can you believe that somebody that was once on TV now has to work a regular job like most people? And that's the way they were presenting it. Like, this is kind of embarrassing and sad. But there's something, I think, a little gross about that.
About that whole, I mean, just, that premise.
Just the place, the premise of the conversation.
Yeah, yeah, no, and people are bringing that up on online. First of all, the majority of people in this country that are commenting online have regular jobs. So for you to say that this guy, it's like we expect celebrities to be somehow better than us. I don't know how we can castigate people for doing the very same things that we do. I can't believe you're such a loser. You work with me. Like, what is that? what is that? What kind of sense does that make? And people have been tweeting about this. There's one Twitter user who says, her name's Pamela Adlin. Oh, not one Twitter user. This is another actor. She says, I'd been a working actor for years. Jobs stopped as they do. I worked in retail at a flower shop. I passed out flyers. It's about the work. Work gives you pride and purpose. Your visibility as an actor never goes away, but the money sure does. And a lot of people online are talking about how little a lot of actors get paid, or how when gigs slow up, what are you supposed to do in between time? And they say that a lot of the reason why we see actors go through mental breakdowns is because they don't know how to navigate life between the fame, you know, from your highs and lows.
And I could see some people hearing that part of the conversation saying, oh, boohoo, I have to worry about actors now too. But what you're touching on is just the gig economy more broadly. This is how so many people work now.
Yeah,
where the next job is unclear, and you don't know where your next source of income is going to come from.
And what do you do when you pull up in a Lyft and Cosby's driving that Uber?
Well, you mentioned. I mean, when you don't see his show in reruns anymore, and I think most people are happy about that for the most part, or would certainly feel weird if it was around more,
right,
and more visible. But you mentioned, and I think this came up at the time too, but it's a part of the conversation that I don't think was as important as other things that were happening at the time, or we weren't ready to get there, but there is this whole other economy of people who worked on that show who were probably seeing residuals from some of those reruns. And I don't long for the Cosby Show to come back because some people can't make money off of it anymore. But it's just, you start to see that just because someone was on television once and you know who they are,
doesn't mean that they continue to flourish because of that job.
Yeah, and we're all susceptible to the same, you know, economy that we live in now, which is increasingly tenuous for so many people, where you just don't know where the next check is coming from.
And this is an unpopular opinion, and you guys can text in 312-981-7200, but I'm of the thought that in many cases you can separate the person from the art, because where do you draw the line, right? I mean, Cosby produced A Different World, which was the first TV show when I was a kid coming up. A lot of people love and romanticize The Cosby Show. I romanticize A Different World because I didn't know about HBCUs. You know, my parents are immigrants. So the schools that my dad wanted us to go to were Harvard, the MITs. We didn't talk about Howard and all of these historically black colleges and universities. Because when I watched A Different World, I said, oh, there really is a different world out there. There are different institutions where you see how these black educated people at a time when, you know, people weren't able to get to these opportunities. And I saw that in real time. So because decades later, Cosby did this horrible, horrible thing. Do we now, if we take away the Cosby Show, if we follow that premise, we should take away everything he's ever contributed. And what does that do?
Yeah, no, there's no easy answer to a lot of this stuff. I mean, certainly his presence on his show, his physical presence in that show is something that's a little more difficult to reckon with. Whereas, you know, things that he produced or wouldn't exist without him.
Right.
It's easier to ignore in the moment his influence on them. And I don't have the answer to these questions, but it is interesting.
And we think, and we always forget about this economy of people who suffer because of the terrible mistakes of a person, which,
yeah,
I don't know if that's for better or for worse, but we can't. The same people who castigate Jeffrey Owens, who played Elvin on The Cosby Show, are these the same people that called for everything that Cosby ever touched to disappear from the planet?
Yeah, there's two such different topics, and it
is. You think I'm fusing two things that aren't necessary?
No, I mean I think it's a natural impulse, but I don't think that one necessarily has to inform the other. But it is interesting that Cosby's just popped back up into our lives this week through this story and another actor on his show. I want to talk a little bit more about this after the break, but we got to get to news in just a sec. This is WGN Nightside. I'm Griffin Filipich here with Doma Tipango.
Thank you, Raj. WG and Nightside, Doma Tipango, Griffin Filipich. And for you, we got about, what is this, a few more minutes of Labor Day, less than 20 minutes, about 16 minutes left of Labor Day. Happy Labor Day to you guys out there. Did I do the math right?
No, I don't think so.
24 minutes.
Yeah, there you go.
There we go. There we go. Got to carry the one.
I was gonna let it slide, but if you ask, right. I'm gonna be honest with you. I gotta let you know.
Well, that'd be the one thing someone calls in about. You guys can't even do math. Fake news. Get off my lawn. You know, I don't want that to happen. Don't want any of that.
Yeah, you don't want to turn into me.
If it was Roger, it would have been perfect, man. Hey, I know you've seen this. We've been talking about this off air. Colin Kaepernick named the face of Nike's 30th anniversary of the Just Do It campaign. Of course, Colin Kaepernick was on the San Francisco 49ers, cut from the team, and in the midst of all of that turmoil, kneeled to bring attention to the killing of African Americans at the hands of police officers, and also to bring attention to racial injustice in this country. Now, in between that, he's donated millions of dollars to multiple causes, have asked different celebrities to do the same thing, has become more of an activist, even in the way he tweets and carries himself on social media, more of an activist than an athlete, except for every now and then we see him still throw the pigskin and we see his steel has it, you know, but he's been more of an activist and kind of a symbol of a Muhammad Ali-esque figure, but also a divisive figure because a lot of folks aren't watching the NFL because of that whole kneeling protest. Well, now Nike, despite all of that, has decided to make Kaepernick one of the faces of its new 30th anniversary Just Do It campaign, releasing a picture with his face in the middle, big afro and all. And the caption says, "Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything. Hashtag just do it." Griff, what do you make of this?
Well, I personally support Colin Kaepernick, and I love the stand that he's taken, and I'm inspired by the fact that it's inspired other athletes to do the same. So personally, I like to see him being championed,
yeah,
on a larger scale, and also. We've been talking about work for the past half hour on Labor Day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the parts of that conversation was he was not being picked. You know, after he made his protest, teams were more reticent to draft him and put him on their team. People said that was because of his declining ability, but that didn't seem... There's a lot of contention about that.
About whether or not he's become a worse quarterback, or is it because he's taking a political stance and that's why he can't get a job?
And many people seem to think, and I tend to see it this way, that his actions sort of prematurely ended his football career. So to see him get a full Nike deal, you don't really have to work after that. I mean, as far right. as... I don't want to traffic in the stuff we were talking about, like, oh, you see someone on TV, you think they're good for life. And that's not, of course, that's not the truth. But a Nike deal on this level,
yeah,
that's a lot. That's like, if anyone was concerned about his work prospects, I don't think that was exactly it. But you should be able to work if you want to, and you're qualified.
Well, this is interesting.
But he's going to be set now for a while, at least. Yeah,
absolutely. And he agrees with you because he's filed a collusion grievance with the league, claiming that he was being kept out of the league because right. of the protest that he started. So that's happening in the midst of this being released on Labor Day, which is a very, very cool move on Nike's part. But also being called problematic by a lot of activists and people online. Now, because it's being released on Labor Day and because Kaepernick has become this symbol of social justice, is there a space for social justice and capitalism to coexist? And this Twitter user says no. There's somebody on Twitter, goes by the name of Rice and Stew, cool name, sister, I like that, says this Nike Kaepernick campaign is a perfect example of how social justice under capitalism is decontextualized and reinscribed in terms of capital. I'm going to repeat that in English because she used a lot of big words. Basically, that this has taken a really serious issue about racial injustice and talking about standing up for you believed in, taking it out of the context of these racial justice conversations and used it as something marketable. Because when you use just a generic term like something you believe in, stand for something, you can believe in anything, you believe in apple pie, there's a holiday for everything, like you could believe in National Apple Pie Day,
right? Well, the text that Nike is willing to put along with that picture is automatically going to be vague, right? They just want to say just do it again,
right?
You know, it's the 30th anniversary, that's basically where they're always going to end up. They're not going to say anything overtly political, but I would say using his image and using him in this campaign in this way is automatically political.
Automatically.
Yeah.
And people are taking it that way. So people right. who are not fans of Kaepernick in this whole protest.
Yeah, well, you were bringing up people criticizing it from the left, basically, from people who do agree with what he's done and his sentiment, but in this development of it, they don't like.
Yes. Right? Yes. Because people from the left are really going in on this.
Because why exactly? I mean, I think I know why, but it's hard to get there a little bit.
It's kind of, okay, so just driving the point home. You have a cause that you believe in that's so serious in terms of police brutality. It's hard to fathom that a company is bankrolling a person to be the face of said movement. It comes off as disingenuous.
Mm-hmm.
And it also comes off as peddling a product that already, you think about the bait trucks that happened in Chicago. There was this bait truck issue where police in Inglewood set up a truck filled with sneakers, a freight, filled with Jordan sneakers, put in the middle of this impoverished neighborhood because they received a lot of reports about people robbing these freight trucks in the area. So it was an operation to nab these robbers. Well, three people went in, opened the truck, stole the shoes, and were apprehended. They end up being let go because activists came out. They caught the whole situation on camera. And there was this whole movement against this type of thing that they're calling entrapment, quote unquote. So there was a rapper, Vic Mensa, came to Chicago and threw his own event called the Anti-Bay Truck and gave out 7,000 pairs of free shoes. So, I mean, this is, and I bring that up to say that in these neighborhoods, especially impoverished neighborhoods that Colin Kaepernick is representing, this type of capitalism represents the haves and the have-nots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people being teased and bullied at school because they don't have the Nikes or whatever like that. And Colin Kaepernick being an athlete that represented the antithesis of that in a way. No, I'm not going to endorse any products. I'm not even playing in the league. I'm about the people. I'm fighting for the people. So people from the left are saying that for that person to then become the face of a company is problematic.
Right. Yeah. I understand that completely. And because what is Nike? They can make a political statement in their advertising if they want, but ultimately their goal, like any company's, is always going to be to make money.
So, and personally, you know, I'm just putting the view out there. I personally don't like the idea that just because someone stands for something, they should want to be poor.
Right.
Right. Like,
well, that's the thing is, so because he said something political, now he's not allowed to
find some way to support himself. He's been giving away millions of dollars to support these causes with virtually no income. He lost all of his endorsements. Like he might have investments, of course, that we don't know about. But I feel like in my mind, Kaepernick is playing Madden. Like, you know, he's on his couch playing Madden. He's out of work, people. So if he can get an endorsement, I mean,
he uses himself as the character. He's like, you're right. Playing it.
Not to get off track, but I don't think he can use himself as can he? Is he in Madden 19?
He can create a player.
He's not playing the new version. He's playing Madden 14.
There you go.
Madden 13.
Back in the day, you know what I mean? I mean, and so like, but then you got people making the analogy. Like, I mean, you know, Dr. Martin King did the March on Washington. That would have been a great Nike campaign. You're doing a lot of walking, marching, posing. Just do it.
Can you imagine Dr. King in like a pair of like Air Jordans?
These are the most comfortable shoes. You know, so I mean, but as ridiculous as that sounds, Kaepernick has kind of become.
I'm so sorry. I can't get past that impression. That was outrageous.
It's good.
Oh my God.
I just got to go. I just got to take a walk really quick just to get over that.
Just to get over that.
No, I think it's so interesting. I mean, we are focusing on this one side of the conversation too. These are people who agree with him mostly, but are a little curious and worried about the tech that this new stage of Colin Kaepernick's activism is going to take now that he's the face of Nike. There's other people who are just like, well, he disrespects the flag. I hate Colin Kaepernick and everything that he stands for. I'm done with Nike. And that's the more immediate reaction. We kind of skipped that first one.
Yeah. So let's talk about what people on the right are saying, which is actually largely, it's more fierce than it's like tepid responses from the left. Like these criticisms that I've given, they're like, oh, I like Kaepernick.
But it's those are the ones that I think you and I personally are a little more interested in digging into and parsing out your feelings about. Yeah.
Yeah. But now talk about what folks at the right are doing. Is it these things are going viral right now. What's happening?
Oh, I saw the big photo was somebody cutting the swoosh off their Nike socks.
Yeah, they're just cutting them straight off. And I mean, I think this is kind of a minority of that group of people. Most people who disagree with Colin are probably just like, well, I always disagreed with him. Like, I'm not going to do anything more. I don't really care.
Right.
But you got some young guns cutting the swoosh off their Nike socks.
Burning their Nike apparel.
Yep.
Yeah, it's possibly a small vocal group. You don't want to put too much emphasis on it. But, I mean, of course, they knew that side was going to be out there, too, when Nike makes this decision as a company. And that's interesting, too. Most companies, at least, you know, when Trump was elected, as times get super divisive in the past couple of years, I think it's been a very tough space for companies that want to appeal to everyone to know how to proceed exactly.
Exactly.
And mostly you just expect that they want to stay out of it completely. Nike doesn't, maybe there was a time where they didn't want to have anything to do with this conversation, but as it becomes politics and sports, and especially football, and Colin Kaepernick get so intertwined,
right,
and Nike wants to be a part of sports in a way that's also pretty inextricable, they realize that we may have wanted to stay out of this conversation completely, but that's probably not possible anymore. So instead we can make a strong statement on one side or the other, and it seems like this is what they picked.
And I think it's a not only them making a moral statement or like a political statement, but I think they're also in touch with their base and who makes Nike authentic. And there are some other faces that are part of this this campaign that we'll talk about in just a second. You're listening to WGN Nightside. This is Doma T. Pongo, Griffin Filipich. We'll let you know on the other side of the break who else is part of this 30th anniversary campaign. This is WGN Nightside. It's 11:47.
WGN Nightside on WGN Radio. Of course, I'm Griffin Filipich, joined in the studio by Doma T. Pongo, Tom Hush producing and playing this music. What is this? Doma T., you took Doma T. to another place for a second.
I love
this. Oh, really? Oh, this is Bad, Bad, Not Good.
Yeah.
This is from their cover of Kanye West's Flashing Lights. They do like this big opening, you know, actual cover part with the big synth lead, and then they just go into a full breakdown.
This
unbelievable.
Is beautiful.
This is super good.
God.
They recorded this when they were like younger. They were like maybe 19 years old.
When was this released?
This is the original. Maybe 2011.
Wow.
If that.
Wow. The precursor to my other favorite song, Flashing Lights. Wow.
I know.
It's a T Hush. I see you, man.
T Hush.
T Hush.
We've been talking about Colin Kaepernick, who was just announced today is going to be one of the faces of Nike's 30th anniversary Just Do It campaign. So it's been 30 years. First of all, that was kind of some news to me, that it's been 30 years of Just Do It.
Yeah.
That's been a slogan for longer than I've been a person.
Longer than you've existed. Didn't you feel like Nike was an older company than that, than 30 years?
Well, I imagine they are, right? But just the campaign is that old.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. That's what I mean. The Just Do It campaign, I meant to say. It's like it seemed like it was so ubiquitous, so Nike.
Can you imagine Nike without that slogan?
Not at all.
No, yeah. Well,
not at all.
What was it before Just Do It?
Like, just try it. Don't bother. You don't want to. You don't want to do that.
You don't want to do that.
But and they weren't really selling shoes.
No, see, that's the shoe company that I would go to, because it's like, we get it. We understand each other here. That's how I approach a lot of things. So these are the people who can make shoes for my lifestyle, probably.
Right.
You're good.
You don't have to try it. But, you know, Colin Kaepernick is not the only person that's part of this campaign. Serena Williams, also a part of this campaign. There's a picture of her as a kid. This is the cutest picture. Check out her Twitter page if you want to see it. She's taking a swing at a ball, holding a tennis racket. She looks to be about 12 or 13 years old, I'd say. And it says, "It's only a crazy dream until you do it." And the hashtag Just Do It right at the bottom. And why this is so significant is because, of course, Serena Williams just, what was that, last week, the Tennis Association, I don't know what's the proper word for the tennis people, the tennis leadership, the tennis league, the tennis federation, the big guys in charge.
Just keep guessing, you'll land on it.
I'll land on it at some point. The big guys in charge of tennis said that they're going to ban The bodysuit that she's been wearing, even though it kind of helps with her blood clot, she's been having trouble with blood clots since she's had her child. And this helps with blood clots. But if you've followed her career, she doesn't care about dress codes. For her whole career, she's been wearing really provocative, and I don't mean that in a sexual way, but provocative and controversial in that sense, outfits when she plays. And when they did that, Nike posted this picture on their Instagram of Serena Williams and said, "You can take away a superhero's costume, but you can't take away their superpowers." And I thought that was beautiful. And so Nike is really taking this stance, siding with athletes in these different situations, but not just athletes of color, which I think is particularly interesting because Nike's over-indexing communities of color. And I think Nike knows that. I do think they feel like they have a moral compass or whatever. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you know, by and large, they over-index in communities of color. They know who their base is. And I think they're playing to that base. And I think we can't forget that.
That's interesting. So, I mean, you can agree with them all you want, but you still are suspect of the motives. Although you don't sound so negative exactly.
I'm a capitalist.
But yeah.
So I get it. You know, I think you can do good and do well at the same time.
Yeah, it's the French Tennis Federation, by the way.
Okay, I landed on it accidentally. The French Tennis Federation. Thank you for fact-checking.
I know we've moved on now. But yeah, no. And it's funny. A couple days ago, that was like, we saw Nike make that statement, that tweet, and that felt like them really sticking their necks out for one of their people, you know, or
yeah,
like really stepping up to support them. And now it seems like a footnote on the Colin Kaepernick thing a little bit, although it seems to come from the same place. And maybe they're sort of setting the stage for this next move, which is
athletes standing for something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Athletes, yeah, and people standing for something. They want to represent that.
And they are more willing to, you know, oppose people who disagree with the athletes that they want to be in business with.
And
instead of telling their athletes, stay out of it.
Right.
You know, it's sort of the Michael Jordan model. I mean, he's famously apolitical, not political at all. He was just, even today, you know, he kind of gets dragged into things with LeBron James and the president. And the Donald Trump's tweeting about him, and he did make a statement where he said he supports LeBron James, but he mostly just defers on that issue. He doesn't want to go there.
He stays totally out of the fray.
And and that's been status quo. That's how things have worked for the longest time. And Nike, as a company, seems to be saying, we know that just isn't going to be the way things work, at least for the time being. So we have to become a little more outspoken as a company.
But Griff, is Nike alienating too large of its customer base by taking a stance on one side versus the other?
I mean, I think that's what a lot of people are going to argue who disagree. And mm-hmm. There's just no way. I mean, I'm sure they've done a lot of the research on that I haven't. I mean, they must know that this is a calculated risk.
Well, I'm gonna say this, and in the simplest terms, black people buy a lot of Nikes. So if I'm Nike, if I'm Nike's marketing director, I know who Nelly had the song Air Force Ones, did not get paid a cent off of it, was a number one hit for a long time, one of the best Nike commercials that Nike did not have to pay for. This is how linked hip hop culture and the Nike brand is. You play to black culture. I mean, you have to. If you're a smart company, that's what you do. I think, and the reason I'm sensitive to it, I remember there were so many brands that rappers would promote, and these brands began to distance themselves. I remember Tommy Hilfiger said he didn't want rappers in his clothing.
What was that, Cristal, the champagne?
Cristal.
Remember that? Yep.
It's Cristal might be the reason Jay-Z is even in the beverage industry. You know, he started to create his own liquor brands because the ones he was drinking and rapping about said they don't want him sipping Cristal. And every chance he gets, he's rapping, said, "Nah, we sipping Ace of Spades because I can't drink Cristal. No one like they don't support me." And so, you know, I think these companies are aware of that. Not only are they doing it because, you know, they're taking a moral stance, but more so, in my opinion, because they know where the money is.
Well, and it could be a little of both. I think that's how they expect or hope people will see it. I think they know we're always going to see them as a company, but they can also use their incredible power as companies have in America to do something with it. It's interesting. We'll see how this unfolds.
Quick break in there. We're right back with news on WGN. What's happening to hip hop? I said I don't have any answers because I took a nap when I dropped my last album. It hurt me like life, but I'm back on these rappers. It's actually coming from humble beginnings. I'm somewhat uncomfortable winning. I wish I could say what a wonderful feeling. We're on the upswing like we're punching the ceiling, but nothing is feeling. WGN.
That's Eminem on WGN Nightside with me, Griffin Philippich. I'm here with Domiti Pongo.
He still has it.
We can talk about that. Let's talk about that for a second. This is a new song from Eminem. If you don't know, I'm reading from Vulture now. On Thursday night with no warning, he released his 10th album. You can fade that whenever.
Fade that one out. And this is the problem with Eminem.
I can't talk over him. He's like 5,000 words a minute. I can't compete with that.
And we're going to jump into it. I don't want to jump you here, Griff. But that is the problem with Eminem. Like, I can't listen to him casually sometimes. There's a lot of music you can listen to casually. Like, we can't even have a conversation over Eminem because he's too rapidy rapping. It's too much. Too many words. And that's not working in today's climate. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, the times have changed. Like the trend in hip hop now, that's the sound that is most dominant in hip hop now is not that It's not what he traffics in.
So Eminem recently just dropped a surprise album called Kamikaze.
Yes, this was Thursday night. His 10th album after last year's Revival. And it's 13 songs produced by Dr. Dre, features all kinds of people.
And what's interesting about this is, you know, Revival, the album that preceded Revival, basically his last maybe three releases have been whatever the opposite of critically acclaimed is.
Critically reviled.
Critically reviled. Thank you. Yeah, pretty much every critic has said that Eminem's best years are behind him.
But I'm getting the sense from you, we haven't gone too deep into it, but I get the feeling you don't agree with that.
I do not agree with that. I think Eminem is still a skilled writer, still a skilled lyricist, and he still has it. He has a new fire in his belly. In that track, that record with Joyner Lucas, who is another very, you know, poised, articulate, lyrical MC, but a lot younger. So the beat and the chorus has more of this new sound. That's the current flow. That's the current rhythm.
Right, whereas Eminem, his trade is switching it up more than that. He switches more in cadence, but also he's more interested in just filling all the space with words.
Every single space.
Which
with
is
words.
Not what people tend to do these days.
Not at all.
Right? And he's just cramming in as much as he can. And he hasn't let go of that. That's what he does.
That's what he does. And he has a lot to say, right? And I think there are older rappers who are releasing great albums later on in their careers, like Jay-Z, Black Thought from The Roots, who they play on one of the late night shows. I can't remember. Kimmel? Fallon?
Jimmy Fallon.
I do this every time. Jimmy Fallon.
Well, there's two Jimmys. It's too many Jimmys.
It's too many Jimmys. Too many Jimmys. No more Jimmys. But and you know, there's still rappers that are creating some of their best work later in their career. We earlier played De La Soul. Made me think they later in their careers a few years ago released an album. And then Tribe Called Quest released an album. That was fantastic.
Yeah.
So it is possible. Eminem, his most recent albums, even among his staunchest fans, his stans, they have not been happy with his work. Now, were you an Eminem fan back in the day?
Well, he was probably, what's the peak of his success? Do you think it's like 98, 99, around the turn of the century?
I'll give him through the early 2000s, because even as his record sales started to wane, 50 Cent, who he signed, kept him relevant through features.
Right.
Dr. Dre, and he was still relevant through features.
He was hugely famous and successful back then. I mean, he always will be from now on. Like, he's a very famous person. But that was kind of, I think, peak. And I was 10, 11, 12 during those years. So, yes, I did like it quite a bit. I had one or two CDs. They weren't, like, top of my rotation. I never was a huge, huge fan, I don't think. But I think at that time, for someone my age, my background, like a white boy,
right.
11-year-old white kids loved Eminem in 1999. I can tell you that.
And working here really showed me how true that is, because I remember I was talking to Judy Pollack in the newsroom, and she was joking about, you know, there's only one rapper I really listen to. Can you guess who it is? And I just was like, she's like, I mean, it should be obvious. And I was like, I don't know. I just couldn't think who that rapper could be. And she was like, Eminem, of course, Eminem. And I'm like, oh, of course. Why? I didn't know white people really loved Eminem as much as we love him too.
I pegged her as a Wu-Tang fan.
Me too.
Judy.
She said Eminem. Who knew?
Well, but I just watched MTV all the time back then. He was on constantly. He had very inventive, anarchic, irreverent videos that played the sense of humor played well to someone who's very immature like me at that time. Since I've soured on a lot of it, but I mean, those songs will always be in my head. Yeah, for sure.
So you're taking us where we're going. So 312-981-7200, we're going to ask you guys some of the artists that you love that you feel may be past their prime or that could be debated. But I also want to talk about this anarchist, irreverent Eminem. Can that type of artist be successful in today's politically correct climate?
Right. Well, it gets that's an interesting question. I think yes, but you have to do it in a certain way. And it also depends on what your definition of successful is. Like, this album by Eminem will be heard by a lot of people. It may be critically receive negative reviews from a lot of people. But what exactly does successful mean? I think with him, there's that question, because it's true. He was very controversial when he came out, but there was more of an appetite back then for that kind of thing. Or the consequences were not as great. Right. For saying, you know, homophobic things in your lyrics, which he would do, or talking about, you know, talking very graphically about domestic violence and you know, casting himself, casting himself as the perpetrator of this kind of stuff and that kind of thing. If he was coming up now and he was not already famous, if he was just starting his career now, I think he would be shut out pretty quick. Maybe that's part of me that's more naive or optimistic. But I imagine that there would be much more backlash to him early on in his career. But now he's so established, there's no getting rid of Eminem.
No. He's established, but the problem is this whole album, Kamikaze, and pretty much the name of it, the first record, is him blasting every critic. Even in the record, he says something to the effect, oh, you're just mad because, he's like, I know you're going to listen to this and say, oh, you're just mad because you're not selling anymore. And the whole album pretty much talks about how upset he is with how his past albums have been received. I mean, the texter just texted in, 708 says, the Marshall Mathers LP, the Slim Shady LP, and the 8 Mile soundtrack. Those are his only best works. And he said, oh, and of course his collaboration with Jay-Z and the Renegade song, the rest of Eminem's discography, straight garbage. And I have to kind of agree, even in these albums, there are high points in the Revival album. The album as a whole, in my opinion, terrible. And then he had these wonky beats, this the carnival music sound that he goes into sometimes. Then he has this plug and play sound that he goes into where he has Skylar Grey or somebody singing a chorus, and then he just rapidly raps for every three verses. And it sounds like someone emailed him a beat with a chorus and he just inserted his verse.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting. We can talk about that in a sec. But a couple things. It's one, listening to this new album, Kamikaze, it's most of the songs are about him being mad at the way that his last album, Revival, was received. And he's you can sense that he's kind of embarrassed by the negative reaction that he got from that album. Did you feel that?
I felt that,
and
yes.
And the criticisms really got to him in a way that maybe they hadn't before. Which, to me, I'm listening, it's like, you kind of expect him to be at this, like I was saying, a new phase of his career where he's sort of untouchable. And if I was him, I would feel like, I can make a bad album. It doesn't matter. It's too late for you if you don't like me. I'm going to be super famous and rich and successful for the rest of my life. I'm not going to be taken down by one bad album. So I don't have to overreact to people not liking an album in this. What I kind of see this as an overreaction to that kind of thing.
Here's the key to Jay-Z's success. You just cracked the code. Jay-Z also has a few duds in his discography.
Everybody does. If you've been doing anything for a long time, it's going to happen.
It's going to happen. Kingdom Come was terrible by Jay-Z. Actually had a lot of records I love on there. Magna Carta, in hindsight, was a terrible album.
You're such a huge fan. I love this about you. You're just, like, first and foremost a fan. So you're like, that album was terrible. I mean, there were, like, five great songs on it, but it was still terrible.
I don't want to admit.
You can't say anything quite that bad.
Yeah, no, I can't fully admit it. And you know, and I think the key to Jay-Z's success is he doesn't acknowledge his failures. He just has some slick line about it, and he moves on, and then he creates 444, which was a classic.
Right, right.
And people have not received the Carter's album that he did with his wife very well, but he's letting it play over time. People are falling in love with it throughout the tour. And because he's not responding to it, Nicki Minaj needs to take a page out of Jay-Z's book, because she is also so upset. But we do have to go to break.
I'll just say one thing. You just think, as a normal person who's not famous and rich, you'd expect, you get to a point where that stuff doesn't touch you. It is, even though I'm not crazy about this new Eminem album, it's an interesting document, because you see he seems more sensitive than ever about this stuff, actually. You never really get to that point. You're always human. Anyway.
And that's the great irony about it, because I kind of like hearing his thoughts and his vulnerability at this point in his career. Zdoma T. Pongo, Griffin Filipich, we're going to continue this conversation and want you guys to call in with some of your favorite and least favorite albums by some of your most favorite celebrities on WGN Nightside.
This is Wisconsin's own Justin Vernon, better known as Bon Iver, the band. Bon Iver, the frontman of that band and main songwriter. But this is him singing on the new Eminem album on a song called Fall. And Eminem sort of laid out his whole thesis statement, I think, for this album there in the beginning. He's, I've been hearing what you've been saying about me. No, I'm going to say what I think about you.
Yeah, right.
It's like, yeah, we got that. We got that, buddy. I'm Griffin Filipich. I'm joined by Zdoma T. Pongo here in the studio for WGN Nightside. We've been talking about this new album that came out on Thursday, a surprise release from Eminem called Kamikaze, his 10th album.
This is actually a perfect example of what we said before break about these plug-and-play records that get sent to Eminem with choruses already on them that you can feel Eminem is disconnected from. Mm. And the proof of this is that in this record, Eminem makes some homophobic statements. He uses the F word, talking about rapper Tyler, the Creator.
It's so interesting. This whole new segment of Tyler, the Creator's career is fascinating to me, too, because he was the one that used to get in big trouble for saying that word, too.
Tyler, the Creator is another rapper who is, what we call it, irreverent. I like an anarchist. I like the way you use those two words.
Yeah.
A shock rapper says right. Everything he's not supposed to say, but then he came out as gay not too long ago. So I guess that kind of put his use of that word in a different context.
I remember I was at Pitchfork maybe in 2010 or 11, and Odd Future was performing, his group, and it was being protested by LGBTQ groups at the festival. So interesting. But anyway, I'm sorry, I interrupted. Keep going.
No. And it was funny because a comedian made a joke about Tyler, the Creator, being upset that more people weren't surprised that he was gay because he'd been making all these homophobic statements all of this time. Right. And Eminem does the same thing. And so he and Tyler, the Creator, are on some sort of beef. And so Eminem used the F word against him. But even on the album, the uncensored version of the album, the word is bleeped.
Right.
You know what he said, but it's played backward. And it's bleeped. And, you know, Eminem's team released a statement, or he said something to the effect of, I use it to describe just a person I don't like. I'm not using it in the context of someone's sexuality.
Wow. Right. I'm really glad that he sang on stage with Elton John all those years ago. Good job, man.
I know.
You really dispelled those rumors.
Yeah, right. Right.
You hate gay people.
Right.
Oh, my God. Well, it's like that justification or explanation for using that word publicly has been, I don't know, that's been out for about 10 years now. I think, like, no, we decided a long time ago that that is not any kind of reasoning. But it's you bring this song up specifically.
But specifically because Bon Iver released a tweet that said, was not in studio for the Eminem track, came from a session with BJ Burton and Mike Will. I'm not a fan of the message. It's tired. Ask them to change the track. They wouldn't do it. There it goes. He goes on to say some other things about, but him being disconnected from the record, only hearing it once it came out, Eminem refusing to change the track. Once again, you feel as a listener, whether you're versed on how, you know, the recording process goes, you can feel when someone is disconnected from a record, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, when you release a record and the person you collaborated with has to release a PR statement via Twitter, distancing themselves from you, we're in a different time. And I think Eminem should have seen this coming.
Well, maybe Justin Vernon should have seen it coming, too. I mean, as we've been talking about, this isn't anything new for Eminem. So if you do a song with him, you might you know, want to prepare yourself for, but he tried to get himself taken off the song, as he said, and it didn't work out. It's funny, you said you can tell that this wasn't made in the same room. The musicians sort of put their parts of the song together, but they never actually collaborated. You can hear that in the music, and then, yes. But, and, or you say you can hear that in the music, and I tend to agree a lot of the time, and on this one, maybe so as well. But not just in the music, in the content of the song, there were disagreements too that might have been worked out or hashed out if they could have
been in
the room together actually doing it.
And that's why he's not making his best music. So it goes back to, so I want to stretch this out and let's talk about other artists,
right,
who have been, had a legacy in this music industry and might have, might be beyond their best years. Because, and the reason I think about this is because bands, and I love rock bands, I love that type of music, because live music forces real collaboration. I can't send you the, I could, but it wouldn't be as good if I sent you the drums, you added the lead guitar and emailed it back. You have to collaborate in person so you get authentic music. Who are some artists that you love that you hate to admit is past their prime?
Well, I need a minute to think about this, but I've got it, I think, because we got to get to news in just a second. I think when we come back, I want to touch on this. And by the way, not just music. I think you could do this for any art form. You know, I like their old stuff. I'm not crazy about what they've been up to lately. Directors, writers, any kind of artist. I think there's a lot of places we can go with this. If you have an answer to that question, somebody who you've loved for a long time but has let you down more recently, we want to hear it on the other side of this news. We're going to get to that in a couple minutes on WGN. So I thought about the Strokes when we were talking about this. It makes sense to hear the Strokes on WGN Radio. This is The Night Side. I'm Griffin Filipich. I'm here with Domiti Pongo. Domiti, you asked a question before we went to news. What's on your mind?
I did, man. Who are the bands and the people and the celebrities that you love, but you have to admit they're a little past their prime? Their best work is behind them. Those movie directors who had those one or two good films, and they released 15 others that were crappy. Those musicians that were in their prime, had really good albums, dope albums like Eminem once did, and his latest work is questionable. I'm thinking about directors, I'm thinking about musicians, you're thinking about the Strokes that just played just then.
Right, yeah, well, it crossed my mind, actually, because you talked about how rock bands, you had a problem with Eminem collaborating with people he's never actually in the studio with, and you can hear it in the music, right?
Yeah.
And you said, but that's not a problem with rock bands. That's never going to happen. Actually, that did kind of happen with the Strokes on one of their... Tom, do you know what album that was?
I mean...
The most recent one, I think, was basically the lead singer, Julian Casablancas, put most of it together himself and just sort of outsourced some of the playing of the instruments to the band members, but they were rarely in the studio together.
Wow. Yeah, they really don't talk anymore, honestly. They're all doing their own thing, and, you know... They were like the hype band of the rock revival, and they were supposed to be the big thing. They were saving rock music. They released like one of the landmark albums of the early 2000s.
Right.
And then like pretty much everything after that has just paled in comparison. Everybody's just like, well, it's not as good as Is This It? Like,
yeah, that was Last Night by the Strokes. That was off of Is This It from, what, 2001?
Yeah, 2001. And apparently that was it. That really was it.
But this is the thing. You try to make these broad statements about somebody's career, like everything they've done since then is terrible. But there's always going to be someone to disagree with you. I mean, I don't think that was it.
Come Down Machine was aight.
The next album was Room on Fire.
Yeah, and it was like good.
This is a hot take. As hot as the room that was on fire for that album. I kind of think it's as good as Is This It to me. That's me. That's
maybe.
Just me.
I mean, it's probably got some stronger. It's got. It's
I know
got
Domiti
some stronger
feels strongly
songwriting.
About the Strokes as well.
Their best work is really behind them.
It's beyond me.
But that's what I've always admired about rock music. So it's interesting that like someone actually tried to do an album through email. why would you even think that would be a good idea? Switching like just a little bit from music, you alluded to directors that we were thinking about, and I couldn't help but think about Spike Lee. His best work isn't behind him because he just did Black Klansman. I've heard great things about it. Haven't seen it yet. The premise seems amazing. Interviews about it have been amazing. Tom says two thumbs up.
Two thumbs way up.
And he only has two thumbs, so that's the best he can do. And I know that means a lot. And so, but... Chirac was terrible.
Oh, man. I don't know about that.
You don't know if Chirac was terrible?
I thought it was interesting. Okay, I got to give it up for Spike Lee. He tried to do something pretty bold. He took an old Greek play, Lysistrata, and planted it in, you know, the South Side of Chicago.
Yeah.
And to granted mixed results. But I thought it was bold. He's released some straight up boring movies over his career.
Yeah.
He comes right out of the gate with stuff like She's Gotta Have It, School Days, and Do the Right Thing.
Yes.
Do the Right Thing? Oh my God. It's so good.
So iconic.
And that, but then he's got like kind of a muddy middle, you know, he's got some bright spots like The 25th Hour and Inside Man. Those were like, oh wow, oh Spike Lee can still hack it. And then, like, Chirac was supposed to be his big thing. Ah, wasn't the statement he wanted. But now he's got Black Klansman. So, his best work is definitely not behind him. He's got a lot more stuff to say. But he's always had a bit of an uneven career.
Yeah.
But you,
that was a great synopsis.
But you felt very differently about Chirac, clearly.
The gang colors were orange and purple. You can't get less threatening than orange and purple. These are the brightest, happiest colors that I've ever seen in my life. Nick Cannon was the lead gangster. It just was so unbelievable.
Takes a hard man to be married to Mariah Carey, you know? Takes a hard man. I couldn't do it.
That's fair. That's fair. You know? So, I mean, and then there was this weird rhyme scheme, but the words didn't necessarily rhyme throughout the movie. The acting was terrible, except for Jennifer Hudson in that scene where she cried over someone who died. And I really felt those tears when she cried in that moment. But the rest of it was just very strange to me. But like you said, I mean, but I think what frustrates me about the time period we're in, artists used to have this latitude to experiment. Nowadays, we throw people away. The tweet that Bon Iver was responding to, someone said, throw away and named everybody who had something to do with Eminem's album. Throw them all away. Why do we throw people away so quickly just because they experimented and it went wrong?
Yeah, and well, Spike Lee is one of the, I think, few people who's been able to have the career that, that you're kind of talking about, where he's so established, he can make...
Ebb and flow. He can have some up and down.
A string of bombs, you know, that are not received particularly well critically and don't do much at the box office. I mean, you could describe the last decade or so prior to Black Klansman as that, I think. But he's still got a movie coming out every couple of years, and people are still going to have their eyes open for it. And I think that is, if we had, we'd be much better off if we had a lot of people like that as opposed to just a few people who are willing to take risks but on a larger scale that a lot of people are going to see and talk about.
Exactly.
But Spike Lee is definitely a good one to bring up in this conversation of people who had such a strong voice at the beginning and just knocked it out of the park a few times, like in a row, say with him. I mean, there have been so many.
We forgot about Malcolm X. That was amazing.
Oh, forget about it. Somebody texting Crooklyn.
Crooklyn's cool.
Crooklyn was amazing to me. But Crooklyn, I could see why you say Crooklyn is, because Spike Lee ebbs between blockbuster, big feeling movies and movies that you just feel belong in a film festival. Mm-hmm. And Crooklyn has that indie film feel, but it also feels so authentic because it kind of remember. I feel like if you were from Brooklyn, you know, I'd only been to Brooklyn, you know, a few times and I didn't stay long, but I felt like it felt like authentic Brooklyn.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
yeah. I just think the more people that are able to try things out and fail and keep going and not get thrown away, as you're talking about. But there does come a point with even your favorite artists where you start to lose. You know, it's a personal thing.
Yeah.
No one can objectively say they're terrible now because it's all subjective, right? But when you as a fan are personally like, wow, I used to just be dying to see what they were going to do next and I don't know if I feel that way anymore. You brought this up in connection to Eminem, but are there other people that you feel that way about?
I was scared that Jay-Z was getting into that space.
Well, you brought him up as sort of a different way to do it than Eminem.
Who fought past it because he had the choice of, do I try to be as young as possible? Do I do collaborations with some of these young artists? He has a song with Future. Future would be described as a mumble rapper. Do I try to do collaborations with the kids and try to hang with them? Or do I just lean into how old I am and just be myself? And he always goes back to his personal truth. So he even had a song called 30's the New 20, on Kingdom Come, and I think he was like 36 at that time. And I'm like, well, 40s to do what? Like, when you get there, what is it going to be? But he did 444, which basically talks about the problems he had in his marriage, investing in art, buying real estate, wishing when he was young and he had $1 million, he could have bought this building. Now it's worth $20 million. And he missed out on those investment opportunities, and walks us through it in a way that still high energy, youthful, something that you can listen to, you know, while you clean the house, while you're on a flight, maybe not in the club, but that's not what it's for, you know?
Right. I like this text from 870. It said, Def Leppard, every album since Hysteria sucked. I can't speak to that personally. I'm not sure, but I'll take your word for it.
Probably did. You know, I don't think I listen to any other Def Leppard albums other than Hysteria.
Give me a week to sort of
to unpack this,
to take it in, take it all in, and I'll get back to you. But no, but I believe it, and I think, you know, it happens.
Yeah, it happens. Absolutely, the best of them. Yeah. There are a few artists. This is a hot take. I got a hot take. Hot take. Prince has not released great albums later in his career. Rest in peace to the legend, the Purple Legend.
Are you sure you want to? It's too late now. It's out there now.
It's out there. Rest in peace to the Purple Legend. T Hush, if they start burning steaks outside, can you just dump that for me? Do we still have the delay?
We are past that 8 seconds.
Oh my God.
You're done. You're cooked.
I'm cooked. Yeah, I don't think Prince's albums later in his career were great.
But it with a legend like him, you start the standard to which they would have to live up every single time. It's just not possible.
It's impossible.
The world changes around you, and you want to keep doing the same thing. I mean, not that I'm not accusing Prince of that, but this is what we felt with Eminem.
Yeah.
It's like, he just does what he does. He's never going to change. I think a lot of artists probably do feel that, like, well, I'm good at what I do. So just because the world doesn't want it anymore the way that I do it exactly, they kind of heard it and they liked it, but now they've moved on to something else. I can't change, you know, you can evolve as an artist, but like, you can't change fundamentally who you are or what you're going to produce just to please people. So
that's very true.
There's always going to be this sort of interaction, and I kind of like it. I like following people through the chapters of their career, even mm-hmm. the ones that are the bad chapters, you know, just like, let it evolve over time, right? Don't throw people. I keep coming back to what you said. I like that. Don't throw people out.
Don't throw people out.
Just let them have a bad album. It's okay.
Kanye West is in this space.
Oh my gosh. I mean, forget about it.
But he's so talented that each of his bad albums have great moments. I hated.
Well, I don't think he has a bad album. That's me.
Really? I hated Yeezus.
Oh, what are you talking Yeezus. About? Yeezus is dope.
Yeezus didn't have a bass line until the sixth track. What are you talking about?
Exactly.
No 808s. Yeah, it was just anti-everything. I will say Kanye goes so left that other artists copy what he does and do it better. I remember people didn't like 808s and Heartbreaks when it first came out. Now everything sounds like 808s
and Heartbreaks. Dude, that album built Drake's career.
Yeah.
That is just the truth.
This show is full of hot takes. Oh, my God.
Well, we need to take a break from him really quick, but we'll be back in just a minute to talk more about this. Many other things. We're with you till 1 a.m., so we just got a couple more minutes here on Nightside on WGN.
Suddenly, I smell soul food. This music feels like a good barbecue. This is Doma T. Fargo, Griff Filipich. Who are we listening to, Tom?
Her name is Maria Takeuchi, and this is a song from like the early 80s during the kind of like Japanese pop funk golden age, and it's straight beautiful. It's called Plastic Love.
And golden it was. Was this golden, Griff?
Do you Absolutely. Agree? I for a second I thought maybe it was another editorial comment, maybe a song from someone you feel fell off. Do you think she fell off?
Honestly, she's what the internet would call YouTube core, because she just like appears in everybody's recommended feed eventually.
Really?
If you go down a certain hole of the internet, she pops up. It's just like, why? I don't listen to Japanese funk, but then you listen to it, and all of a sudden you're super into Japanese funk.
But that's what I'm talking about. We've been talking about music and artists who are past their prime, not only just musicians, but you can move at your own frequency that makes you comfortable. You know, there are a lot of artists who, like Snoop, We kind of forget that he's he actually just released a gospel album, Snoop Dogg, believe it or not. And apparently it's pretty good. But, you know, there are a lot of artists who just continue to create, remain relevant on social media, make music with younger artists, and they just continue to ebb and flow throughout their careers. And we don't acknowledge that they haven't created great work.
Well, and there are people who achieve huge celebrities. Snoop Dogg's a good example.
Yeah.
Who then recede from that position. He's no longer somebody that, like, when he puts out an album, it's a huge deal that everybody's talking about. But he does so gracefully. Like, he doesn't care.
No.
It's not a big deal. And if it got bad reviews, he wouldn't care.
And if he cared, we'd know he cared. And then it just reinforce that negative energy, which is the same thing that has happened with Eminem. A commenter says, Stevie Wonder.
Oh.
Ouch. Biggest disappointment was his Happy Birthday song. Hope he comes back with something big in all caps.
That's so funny. I don't love to be in a position that I'm going to put myself in right now, quoting the movie High Fidelity, starring John Cusack. But there is a scene where they talk about this exact thing. That's the movie that takes place in a record store. They're talking about music the whole time.
Uh-huh.
There's a scene where Jack Black, he's a character. He mentions Stevie Wonder in the same context as an artist who was once great and now has put out what he deems to be a bad song. I think they were talking about I Just Called to Say I Love You. That's the Stevie Wonder song. You disagree. That's the other part of this, is that not everyone has the same set of criteria of people who quote unquote fell off.
I feel like me saying that thing about Prince gave 773 the courage to text in. I just want to stand in solidarity with you, person. Thank you for being brave enough to say something about the great Stevie Wonder.
Right, exactly.
I think that's what the motivation was.
We talked a little bit about Spike Lee, although that one's a little more controversial than probably this next one. I don't know if you're familiar with the name Cameron Crowe as a writer-director.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oof, dude.
How do you feel about it? This applies, right?
This hurts. This really hurts, because he's made, like,
a few of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Everybody loves Jerry Maguire, starring Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Almost Famous. These are movies that were crucial to me at a certain age. Say Anything, another John Cusack. He keeps coming up. He wrote Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Didn't direct that one, but... And then there was a period in his career that was people disagree on this one with the other Tom Cruise movie, Vanilla Sky.
No, that's absolutely where it begins.
It's a misfire. And then Elizabethtown was a movie starring Orlando Bloom. And then Aloha is specifically sort of the nadir for me. That came out a couple years ago. It's not that long ago, but does that ring a bell with you at all?
Not at all.
No.
And the title just makes it sound like a bad movie already.
It was forgotten pretty quickly, and rightfully so. It was pretty tough to watch.
Especially with the controversy surrounding Emma Stone playing a supposedly half-Hawaiian woman.
Right. That was,
Lily White.
You know? Just tack that on. But if you, and this is how bad the movie was, that was not the most offensive thing about it to me. No.
Whoa. It got worse than that.
I mean, it's easy for me to say, but it was just a tough movie all around, starring Bradley Cooper and Rachel McAdams also.
You're a walking movie encyclopedia.
Well, we got Tom here too. He's doing a lot of the work. And I always felt that way about M. Night Shyamalan too. You know, he made
Sixth Sense. That's the only one I know to be great from him.
Signs.
He had one right after that.
I mean, Unbreakable was amazing.
Yeah, no.
Unbreakable. And then it was so good that we got Split, which was a Shadow sequel, and now we're getting Glass.
Well, he had the dip, but now he's kind of back.
Now, yeah.
Because it's Unbreakable starring Samuel L. Jackson?
He's in it, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
He plays the villain. Yeah.
I do remember Unbreakable. That was a good movie.
Super good.
M. Night Shyamalan, okay.
I mean, he came out of the gate just so strong, and then there were some, you know, people probably disagree with this, but, you know, The Village... I actually think The Village was pretty good, but, like, it wasn't up to the par of those other ones.
But I gotta say this. I sincerely doubt that there's that many fans of Lady in the Water out there.
But if there are,
please, like, keep doing your thing. I mean...
Keep on pushing.
Keep playing your game, man. Just do it.
We respect it. You know, all opinions and views are welcome here, or... I don't know if that's actually true, but on this particular topic.
All opinions and views are welcome.
I'm open to hearing it.
One thing that's interesting to me, though, about different art forms is, like, some art forms give you leeway to try and try and try again. I feel like hip-hop throws you away more quickly than other genres. Just this past weekend was the Chicago Jazz Festival in Millennium Park, Pritzker Pavilion. Ramsey Lewis is 83 years old, the legendary jazz pianist. He... that might have been his last performance. He says he may retire. He's recorded 80 albums. I got to thinking about how many pop stars would we still listen to at 83 years old. Like, are we cool with an 80-year-old, like, Beyonce getting out there and doing her thing? I think she's going to be Aretha Franklin status.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe not Beyonce is the best example, but more poppy music.
Like, or even with hip-hop, you think you'd see Jay-Z out there when he's 80?
I will go to see Jay-Z when he's...
I would, too.
When he's 80.
And I wouldn't even go to like... I don't like Jay-Z, and I'd go see him when he's 80. That might be the only time I go to see him.
Our next show is us unpacking the fact that you don't like Jay-Z. We'll have to talk about that.
right,
you can't
right.
just drop that with 2 minutes left, and now we gotta go.
Right, that was a hot take, full of hot takes right now.
Domati's reeling over there. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, that's the thing people always say about hip hop is like, you know, when we get older, it's just gonna sound so weird.
And that's the problem. It's a young art form.
But that's true. But that's true of that's just what happens to any art, like especially music genres. That's what rock and roll was the new. Young music for people and older people hated it and were threatened by it in a lot of ways, and then you fast forward 50 years and Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones are touring. And
does Mick Jagger still get the respect from younger artists in that genre that he deserves, and from fans as well?
I'd say yeah.
Yeah, that's what's probably. Different about hip-hop.
I don't know. I think if you found a lot of young, I don't know. Rock is like dying is the other thing. I mean, it's just they're two genres that are in completely different stages of their own existence. So it's hard to say. I don't know.
It's hard to get to. Listen, you've been listening to WGN Nights. So I always love talking pop culture with you.
Oh, it's been fantastic,
man. We thank you to Tom for producing. Thank you to Roger Battish for doing news. Esmeralda Leon for doing traffic. My man pushing the buttons in the back. Thank you so much. Everybody who pushes the switches over here at the WGN studios. Really appreciate it.